Andy Murray, according to the BBC, has said this afternoon that it is positive that world number one Novak Djokovic has been released from detention in Australia, but that the Serbian player has a few questions to answer still. Right, so you will know that Djokovic won a court battle that overturned his visa cancellation yesterday. The Australian Open starts next week, but Australian border officials are looking into whether his travel entry form included a false declaration. It's positive that he's not in detention anymore, said Murray, but there are still a few questions that need to be answered around the isolation, which I'm sure we'll hear from in the next few days. To talk about that and other things, let's welcome to the programme for the first time in 2022, my friend and your friend, the broadcast journalist and author and host of The Politics Show every Friday at 5 o'clock in Bristol, thisweek.org.uk. It's the one and only Tony Gosling. Welcome back, Tony. How are you?
Hi there. Yeah, thanks. I'm talking to you, Richie, from the centre of Bridport in Dorset, where I'm about to go to something called Stand in the Pub, which is because actually the publicans that are opening their places to Stand in the Park groups are finding that they're standing room only. So that's why I'm down here, and thanks very much for inviting me on again.
Hey, Tony, that's incredible news, mate. I'm delighted to hear that. So publicans have been going to Stand in the Park events. They've been meeting people, and now those people are going back to their pubs to spend a few quid, and those pubs are doing very well. Thank you very much. That's amazing. I'm delighted to hear it.
Yeah, the last time I came down here, which was because I've got some friends around here anyway, before Christmas, the place was absolutely heaving. And if, you know, publicans want to bring their customers back into the pub, this is the thing to do.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. I'd like to talk more about that maybe another day, maybe with some of those publicans. Tell me this. What do you make of the Novak Djokovic situation? It's getting global media coverage on the hour, every hour. I think you're a bit of a fan. I'm not sure whether you're a fan of tennis, but you're a bit of a fan of what Djokovic has been doing. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I can remember Bjorn Borg and Arthur Ashe in those days, and of course, John McEnroe, him and his You Cannot Be Serious. That was my era, watching tennis. I haven't watched it for decades, but I'll certainly be watching this Open and rooting for Djokovic. I think he's done an absolutely brilliant job in completely outplaying the Australian government, totally from top to bottom. You know, there is an outside chance, of course, that he's a bit of an insider. You know, I think Hugo Talks, as you said, has pointed out that he has got some connections with the World Economic Forum. But quite clearly, he's not playing to their tune, is he, anymore?
No, he isn't. He isn't. It's going to be interesting tomorrow. I've seen some documents online today that suggest that he told a couple of porky pies when submitting his documentation, one of the lies being that he hadn't been anywhere. He hadn't, from the time he submitted his applications, that he hadn't been anywhere, that he'd been in his domestic situation, and then he flew to Australia. But apparently, in the meantime, he was in Spain, apparently, or somewhere like that. If that's the case, he's in the soup. They'll boot him out for sure, won't they?
No, not necessarily, because that might even compound things. I think the part of this is it's the old British, you know, sportsman-like approach to these things. There will be an absolutely terrible reaction to the Australian government if they don't let him play now, because this will be seen to be, you know, the world's number one is not allowed to play, so someone else is going to win the money. And, you know, this is just so unsportsmanlike. The psychological effect, I think, on the Australian government is going to be massive disapproval. You're cheats, you know, you're not fit to run the country. So that's why, I mean, I think he's played a blinder. He's done a fantastic job in getting himself and the Australian government into the position where they just cannot win anymore.
And yet, you know, I know that the media, you and I know how the media works and how it can manipulate viewers and listeners. But still, I couldn't help but be struck in the last couple of days by the amount of Melbourne citizens or Victoria citizens taking to the airwaves to say that, oh, we've had to put up with all these crappy lockdowns for 2 years. It's been the worst place in the world to live. How dare he come in without a vaccination? And that strikes me as kind of extraordinary, that they're not turning their ire on or focusing their anger on the Victorian authorities or the Australian government. They're, many of them seem to be pissed off with Djokovic because, oh, well, we've had to go through all of this crap. Why don't they make that leap, Tony? Why don't they make the leap to understanding that the restrictions were never necessary in the first place?
Well, because of confirmation bias and because they don't, you know, I think almost all of these stories that we've been covering over the, gosh, must be decade or so I've been chatting to you, there are, Richie, there are two sides to look, ways to look at it. You know, you can look at it as Djokovic is using his privilege to get around the rules, you know, or you can see, well, actually, he's playing a very clever game and he's shown up the Australian government. So he's gone through the system, he's applied to go, they've said yes. And what it's done is it's exposed the Australian government as actually very petty-minded and pathetic. And look, these people are not there to run the country. They're there as representatives of the international pharmaceutical industry. They're there as representatives of the globalists. And they're there to basically plough their own furrow. They're not interested in actually what is the best way to run the country and how to run. You know, they're interfering in something which they've got absolutely no competence in, and it shows a mile off.
Here's a question for you on Djokovic before we turn to domestic affairs here in the UK. I have looked into Djokovic since I heard that he frowned on vaccinations and that he was very interested in vaccine injuries. And I wouldn't be surprised if Djokovic, I wouldn't be surprised if he listened to programs like this one. I don't mean this one specifically, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was open-minded. Maybe he checked out Bilderberg.org, Tony Gosling. Maybe he listened. No, seriously, right? He strikes me as the ideal candidate for listening to programs on the style of this one. So my question would be then, with that profile, why wouldn't Djokovic take the opportunity, when questioned, to say, for example, well, it looks like the jabs are doing enormous damage to people. Sportsmen and women are dropping like flies around the world. I've looked at the UK reporting, I've looked at the American reporting, I've looked at the European reporting, and it seems these jabs are not as safe as you make them out to be. I'm imagining now I'm Novak, so I'm Novak, and I'm speaking to Sue Barker, maybe, or to somebody on Radio 5 Live, and I say, you're not doing your job, why are you not looking into this? Now, I know that Novak Djokovic will never do that. Is it because your pal that you mentioned thinks he's an insider, or is it because ultimately everything comes down to brand Novak? Why wouldn't he take that opportunity and that platform to put that information in the public domain?
Well, look, I think he's doing a fantastic job as he is. In what he's doing is it's a kind of dog whistle, isn't it? So he doesn't necessarily want to, stick his neck out too far. And also to be potentially then misquoted, etc. I just think it's fascinating. Djokovic, you know, like several other prominent sports people, have been very outspoken about the idea of mandatory vaccines, vaccine passports, but they've got very little coverage. And what he's done is he's manoeuvred himself into a situation where it's impossible not to cover what he's doing. So I think he's playing a very, very smart game here. That's my opinion. Also, I mean, why have his views up until now not been really covered properly in the mainstream press at the level that they are now?
Yeah.
As he's such a prominent person. So I think also, of course, in the background to all of this, you talked about my Bilderberg.org site. That was started up back in 1996, I think it was, just before we had the horrific destruction by NATO of Yugoslavia. Now, I would have thought that he's probably one of those Yugoslavs, as many are in the former Yugoslavia, that know exactly what happened to their country, that it was because it was providing a model, the old Yugoslavia, a sort of halfway house between the communists and the capitalists' countries. That's why it was dismantled and destroyed.
Yeah.
And so there's a tremendous amount of people who got a terrific education in the old Yugoslavia under the sort of Tito regime since the Second World War up until the 1980s. That are very much aware of the massive geopolitical games that are being played, where any massive country like Yugoslavia is just simply not allowed to provide an example of how to do things around the world, which are not communist China and not fanatically capitalist America.
Yeah, it's a really good summing up of that situation. You're absolutely right. Of course, the United Nations and the World Health Organization, they're basically one and the same. Same agendas, founded by the same people. Tony Gosling is our guest. The Politics Show every Friday at 5 o'clock from Bristol. 3 hours of news analysis that you will not find anywhere else. Check it out if you haven't done before. Nothing on the TV and radio today apart from Boris Johnson party, March 20th, 2020. It's funny, Tony, the guy was recovering from COVID, so he didn't do the May 20th briefing. Oliver Dowden did it. This is fun. I find this very amusing. So Oliver Dowden, the culture secretary at the time, delivered the briefing telling people to stick to the rules. 50 feet away in the garden, Bojo and 30 folks were having drinks and what have you. Now, I ultimately couldn't give a shite about that. I do sympathise with those people who couldn't see their dying loved ones. And, you know, they followed the rules and now they're apoplectic to learn that he didn't. I wish that they would reach the conclusion much quicker, faster, that, well, maybe the rules were totally unnecessary and maybe Johnson's conduct and his pals is indicative of the fact that the pandemic is a load of old bollocks. I wish they would, but they don't. They are raging. Now, here's my theory, and you're going to shoot this out of the water, as you so often do. My theory is that even though Boris Johnson is not in charge, the pandemic, the decision to go into lockdown, nothing to do with Johnson, I don't believe. He has pushed back a bit, especially before Christmas. Stage wanted severe restrictions on the country around about Christmas time. He seemed to kind of say, no, we're not going to go down that bloody road. And now, out of the blue, comes this email that's been around for 18 months that says that there was a big party invite and it might do for Johnson. I mean, this very well might cause, might see his resignation. And that's not, I mean, you might disagree with that, but I think it's very, very possible. So maybe those that want to push this agenda further and faster have decided that we need to move Boris out and put some other puppet in his place. Am I wrong?
Yes, I think you are. We've got now is the Cathy Newmans and the Laura Koonsberg, you know, the Channel 4 News and the BBCs of this world, seeing this as a great opportunity to dish the dirt on Boris. I see they don't have pictures of this so-called meeting. You know, the idea is, I think what's really going on is that Boris is now being punished for not creating lockdowns of any sort in Britain over Christmas and New Year. This, I think, is, you know, basically the organised crime Bilderberg mafia out there, the globalists, who can basically get anything they want on the BBC and Channel 4 News, trying to do whatever they possibly can to have a go at Boris, discredit Boris, because of the way that he's given us a Christmas and a New Year. And there is this tug of war going on.
That's kind of what I said.
Boris is in.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what I said?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think he's going to lose his head over this one. Maybe something else, but certainly not, as far as I can see, certainly not this one. I mean, they're outside, for God's sake. This is nearly 2 years ago. I think we all know that the country needs to, you know, be run by these people in some way. And you've got people pulling on one side, which is the COVID research group, Steve Baker, and those guys, who just literally, just before, the day before he was due to make the decision about whether to open up for Christmas or not, whether we were going to get our Christmas or whether we were going to be able to see our loved ones or not. You know, that's what this is really about. So Frost resigns as the doing the Brexit negotiations, and good old Liz Truss is put in charge. Now, that is going to send shivers up Boris's spine immediately, because Liz Truss is totally incompetent, and he's thinking to himself, oh, well, I'm only here because I promised to get Brexit done. Oh, no, what's going to happen now? And so I think they send a very clear psychological message to Boris over just before Christmas, saying, look, open up for Christmas or you get it in the neck, and you're going to lose your support of the backbenchers, the COVID research group, and possibly there's going to be the 1922 committee getting together to decide to replace you. So that was the message they were sending to him just before Christmas. And I think he's now paying for making the right decision then, now, by having the gangster elite. I was just listening to Emma Barnett today on the BBC, absolutely vile
God love
person
you.
Speaking on, yeah. on Woman's Hour, who is the daughter of a brothel owner who was using trafficked girls.
Trafficked girls, yes. Lovely, lovely.
Yeah,
man.
Not entirely surprising that, I mean, and she was very much part of the operation.
No, hang on. She wasn't part of the operation. Let me tell you, she wasn't. What she did, there was an email found where the email demonstrated that she was aware of her father's business because she referred in the email to her father's bitches. Unkind and obviously pretty unfeeling, but there's no...
In which case, in my book, she's part of the operation.
But she was a minor. She was a minor then.
If she's not, as a kid, as a teenager, going to the police to tell them about the trafficked women that her father is managing and running, then she's part of it.
Yeah, but she probably... Hang on. Look, it might sound like I'm trying to cover my arse here. I'm not trying to cover my arse. I just don't care anymore. But I've got to be fair. She was a minor, number one. And number two, there's no evidence that she knew that those girls were trafficked. As far as she may have been aware, those were local girls that were voluntarily working in her father's brothels. Despise Barnett.
Foreign accent.
I despise her as much as you do. But I'm not going to beat her up with that. She was the daughter of a scumbag. And that's unfortunate. I'm not going to blame her for that. Yeah. I blame her for her journalism.
This is the way the BBC is going now. And Koonsberg it's just horrible to see what the BBC's become. You know, something that, what were they doing years ago? They used to do real, proper panoramas. Good God, Doctor Who that was worth watching in the 70s with, Tom Baker. And this was the BBC. It's certainly not there anymore. But anyway, they represent this globalist faction, Richie, I think, now, who are absolutely hell-bent on turning Britain into the sort of farce that we've got at the Senate and Holyrood, where the people are told that they're not allowed to see their loved ones, for whatever reason, and they're not going to be paid any sort of compensation for business owners for blocking people going to them at all. I mean, it's become absolutely absurd now, and it's only organisations like ITN at Channel 4 News and the BBC that provide cover for these lies about what should be happening or shouldn't be happening with lockdowns. I'm getting fed up with this absolute obsession, complete obsession with COVID laws, COVID rules. It's become absolute paranoia. It's like, the obsession that some people had in the old days of washing and cleaning too much, and it's an actual mental illness. That the whole of society's been pushed in to this obsession, and we need to just kick back as hard as we possibly can against it.
Absolutely, T. Amen. And stop complying. I mean, you've never complied with it, neither have I. And I'm sure none of our listeners have, or most of them haven't. It's time that people take...
To be fair, I have complied a little bit. You know, for example, if I'm with someone who I love, respect, for example, my chiropractor, I wore a mask because I love the guy. He's really good at his job. And he asked me, and I said yes. So if someone is going to tell me I'm not allowed to, that's a whole other question. But I've done a little bit of minor complying, but I certainly haven't been wearing masks in the streets, supermarkets, or anywhere.
Well, what you've just described to me there is we have a sensitivity to people. That's a different thing, and an understanding, and an attitude where you'll meet people halfway. I totally understand that. We've got about 14 minutes left with Tony Gosling. Thisweek.org.uk, Bilderberg.org. Check out the Politics Show Fridays at 5 o'clock out of Bristol. It really is terrific, folks. Brilliant stuff lately with you even done some brilliant interviews with the folks who are exonerated after they ripped up Edward Colston's, Colston's statue, yes, in Bristol, and chucked it into the drink, which I say, T, and I'm going to shut up and get out of your way. No matter what you say to me, this is how pig-headed I am. It's vandalism. I don't believe they should go to prison, but it's vandalism. If you want to remove something from a town centre that's owned by the public, well, you get your arse elected to the local authority and you do it. Ripping it up and throwing it into the drink, I don't give a damn how evil Colston was. It's wrong. That's my opinion. You completely disagree. Go ahead.
Well, look, I got another education because I found out that I was actually part of this whole thing.
You were.
Because in 2014, I, with a musician friend, Tim Herford, from a band called the Transpersonals, we decided to go into Bristol Cathedral to sneak in because what happens is the Merchant Venturers, who this is really all about, which is this incredible secret society set up to exploit the Americas in the 1500s, which still exists in Bristol. And if you look them up on Companies House, you'll find it's all incorporated under a royal charter, and it's not managed by the company's legislation. It's managed by the Privy Council, so you can't really find out anything much about them. But these guys, what they do is they now control a whole load of secondary schools in Bristol after the privatisation of the schools, is they block book the cathedral one day a year. What they have, they call a charter day service, which is the commemoration of the day they got their charter. Now, these guys are really the owners of the city. So, you know, Bristol's a former Templar port in medieval times. You know, the Knights Templar had their little ships in the Bristol port. And, you know, it seems to me we've got a similar sort of almost a local Illuminati in these merchant venturers. But anyway, the point being is Tim and I went into this charter day service expecting to be able to sort of sit and watch it. I took my phone and recorded the sermon. Actually, they tried to chuck us out, Richie. So everybody was like marked who is where. And we sat in two empty chairs, and this lady came over just as the service was about to start. She halted the beginning of the service and said, "You two have got to leave." So we said, no, we're just going to sit and enjoy the service.
Yeah.
So eventually, after a couple of minutes, they held the service for us, and we were told to leave. But there was a lovely little verger at the back said, "No, it's okay. You guys can just sit down behind this pillar and enjoy the service." So we stayed. And when the guy started his sermon, I started recording. And so I got the Bishop Mike, as he was at the time in 2014, saying to all these collected school children from all over Bristol who'd been marched in there under orders for this service, something like 500 school kids, saying that Edward Colston's connection with the slave trade was just speculation. Now, once this got out to the BBC, they covered it the next day, and they had Bishop Mike on their programme the next morning. Actually, it was Tim Pemberton, who was a West Indian guy who was the managing editor of Radio Bristol at the time, who I gave the recording to. Then, all of a sudden, all hell broke loose, basically. The whole city realised that this bishop had been lying to these kids about, you know, basically trying to do PR for the merchant venturers to the young people of Bristol who were their, you know, their pupils. So this apparently, according to Christine Townsend, who's now a councillor for the Green Party in the city, she told me that after she heard this recording, she couldn't let it last. And so the campaigners for Colston decided, right, we're going to do something about this. Because one of the things I didn't understand until just literally last week was that the statue was only put there in the 1890s. So this is 150 years after Colston's death.
Why is that relevant, do you think?
Well, it's relevant because the merchant venturers realised that he was a serious problem for them with his so-called reputation around the city, this, that, named after Colston. And actually, the guy was a mass murderer. I mean, you know, so they decided that to try and make a kind of a marvellous image of Colston. This is a brilliant person. Everyone will love him. We think he's great. And it's only him. It's not, you know, as far as I know, anybody else particularly in the city, but they put him up there, the merchant venturers did, in the 1890s as the great guy of Bristol, the great benefactor that did this and that. And I think we've now reached a time, particularly with the big West Indian community in the city, we have had enough of this guy. Now, we're not erasing history by getting rid of the statue. We're just saying this guy should be, the statue should be lying down on the floor in a museum that people can go and see, with a bit of red paint on it and a few dents, rather than, you know, let's stick him up in the main square and as if to say what a great guy he is.
And you're a Bristolian, and I know you've been over that story for years. I totally respect your opinion. I fear, you see, that this eventually goes further and further. I mean, how long before, don't laugh at this now, it might sound a bit silly, but, well, do laugh if you want, you can do what you want. But how long before, we've had this before, haven't we? We've had SUVs, and we've had diesel cars targeted by people. How long before that's acceptable? And how long before a judge says, well, you know, climate change is going to kill us all, so I totally understand that young Johnny and Mary scratched up Richie's diesel car, or punctured Tony's Range Rover, or whatever. Another story today, Tony, that kind of is kind of similar to that. I've been following this through GB News, which is improving. It's improving in terms of its production values week on week. But they're covering this story about this pub in Linlithgow. It's Linlithgow in Scotland. I can't pronounce the bloody thing. It's a pub called The Black Bitch. And it's been called The Black Bitch for forever and a day, because it's named after the Black Bitch of Linlithgow, which is a dog, a female dog. And there's a big campaign to prevent the name of this pub being changed to appease the woke. You know, people want to change the name. It's unacceptable. We can't call a pub The Black Bitch. I'll tell you what, Tony, these culture wars, they do bore me. But I think if you know, you don't say to people, look, you can't just vandalise something that you don't like, even if it has...
There's something very Orwellian about the merchant venturer's attempt to control history here. You know, what you've got is it he who controls the present controls the past. He who controls the past controls the future.
Why not put a plaque there? Why not leave the statue there and put a big plaque there saying this guy was a scumbag? And in the
Do you know what? They were planning to do something like that, but the merchant venturers stopped it happening. Has been going on. Apparently, the first time that there were attempts to get the statue removed, Christine was telling us, was in the 1920s. This is basically the anti-slave, you know, the people that stopped the slave trade in Bristol. We are their successors now, saying that this trade was totally unacceptable. It's, inhuman, and that nobody who was a big part of it. The irony, of course, here is everyone's talking about, oh, you're trying to get rid of history. No one had even heard of Edward Colston.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
And now they have, and they know that he was a guy that we're being told is a brilliant bloke. But actually, he wasn't. He was extremely... And the only way he managed to get away with what he did was because all of the pain and misery was happening over in Africa and on these ships away from Bristol, way away from Bristol, out of sight, out of mind. And they did that deliberately, just as they now do with, you know, various wars that are taking place, Afghanistan and God knows where, and they're trying to control what we know about them through the use of the mass media. So it's a similar kind of thing even way back then. It's about mind control. And we're now saying in Bristol, we're not having any more of that. This guy was a bad guy. Get rid of his name. We don't want his name associated with our city anymore. Thank you. Find one of the people that helped abolish the slave trade. And let's big them up instead.
I'm giving you the win there. That's 3-1. I'm giving you the win there. I'm giving you that one. I can't argue with that. I want to say this to you before we run out of time. This will give you a little bit of a giggle. I remember about 5 years ago, I had a rant on a Sunday morning program that I didn't intend to be amusing, but I ranted. It turned out it was funny, unintentionally funny. I had been in Manchester on Saturday with my better half, T, and we had seen men running around holding their mobile phones in front of their faces, running around. And I hadn't a clue what was going on, until I asked somebody what was going on, and they became very vexed because I was getting in their way. They were going around looking for Pokemons. They were playing a game where you put an app on your phone. This was all the rage. It still is all the rage. And you point your phone at a doorway, maybe at a McDonald's. Maybe you point your phone at a Marks and Spencer's. Now, of course, there isn't a Pokemon there. But a digital one might show up on your phone because these things are... You know this. This is crazy. This made me laugh today. Two cops in Los Angeles were called out to attend a robbery at Macy's in Los Angeles back in 2017. This is totally true, this. They were told it was a serious robbery in progress. There were armed people there and all hands on deck, everybody get there. But the two lads were in the middle of playing this game, Pokemon. So they said, and they've got the audio tapes of this, these guys were fired, but they appealed. Idiots. I don't know how they thought they'd win their appeal. But they said to the dispatch, right, fair enough. And then they said to one another, they said, ah, screw this. And they took out their phones and they went to try and hunt down a Pokemon character instead. And Tony, the reason I'm telling you that is because I don't care how much logic, I don't care how good the news analysis is on the politics show in Bristol on Fridays at 5 o'clock. We're fucked, Tony. We're absolutely screwed as a race of people. There's no hope for us whatsoever when you see this sort of stuff going on. And I've seen it going on around me.
Well, what about the various convictions there have been over the last few months for police sharing pictures of corpses
with
their friends? Look, I think what we need quite clearly within the police is a force that does its job. I was chatting to a guy that's just published a book. He's a professor at one of the universities a few weeks ago, just before Christmas, about, you know, the detectives don't actually investigate anymore. They sit behind a desk. Anything that's really important, they don't go out on the beat asking questions, knocking on doors, according to him. And I certainly, this is my experience of the Avon and Somerset police, is they leave it all to the, or is it the Organised Crime Agency or something they call it? It's Britain's FBI, and also
Serious Organised Crime Agency.
So
yeah.
All of these major crimes that detectives should be looking into don't get investigated. And you know what? The police has completely changed its character as a result. So they're not proactive. They just wait for the evidence to come to them, and they wait for powerful people in the senior levels of the police, like superintendents, to make moves on somebody in order to pursue a prosecution. So the character of the police force has changed. We've got horrific, I think, nepotism goes on within the police. And of course, there's the secret societies, the Freemasonry, which is and groups like Common Purpose, who are basically promoting their own, not the best person for the job. They're often looking at somebody's equality score, saying, oh, actually, we need a woman in this job, where maybe a man might have been better to do it. We don't know, but that's the sort of agenda that they're pursuing. It's a bean counter, box-ticking agenda, which has ended up with a complete demoralisation of many police. Now, that doesn't mean to say, I mean, certainly my experience in Bristol is that sometimes the only agency that's doing anything is the police in a situation. The social services don't care, the council don't care, the housing association, whatever the situation is, don't care. And what happens is the police will maybe send some files to the Crown Prosecution Service, you know, Keir Starmer used to be basically in charge of, and then nothing happens. And so there's a terrible demoralisation within our police force. I just think we need to have, you know, basically people who are well-respected within the police, promoted up through the police, as it used to be in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, in order to be chief constables and also to be completely fearless in the face of their paymasters. The other thing we've got, for example, in Bristol, is Bristol City Council pays the big slice of the police bill. So they don't want to do anything about investigating Bristol City Council for illegally or unlawfully selling off our land to their chum developers. You know, so there are all sorts of forces working against the police, but still, I think they're the best we've got.
Brilliant to catch up with you again, T. Thanks so much for coming on. Folks, do go to bilderberg.org or thisweek.org.uk. Go to amazon.co.uk and buy one of Tony Gosling's brilliant books. And in the very near future, I'm glad to announce this. Tony has agreed to pop articles on richieallen.co.uk from time to time when he has the time, and that'll be great value for us. Tony, thanks, buddy. Lovely to have you on, and I know we'll do it again real soon. And I'm delighted at the news you brought us at the top of the programme from Dorset there. Publicans have been going to stand in the park, and they're meeting people, and like-minded people are using those businesses. That's the way forward, T. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, I'm increasingly finding that almost all stories, there's a sort of the truth and there's the devil's advocates. And, you know, I'm finding this time and time again now this COVID agenda is rolling out, that just make sure you're on the right side of history, folks, because there is a very powerful globalist agenda out there that's occupying many of our important spaces like banking institutions and media. Well, you know, Murdoch, I think, has done a reasonable job, actually, in Fox News, in Talk Radio, and in Sky News Australia, in getting the truth out, which is incredible. You know, I spent most of my life campaigning against the guy, but it seems to have turned out almost okay. Anyway, God bless, Richie. Thanks ever so much for inviting me on again.
You're welcome, T. Bye for now. Tony Gosling, folks. The Politics Show, Fridays at 5 o'clock, out of Bristol. Tony, guest co-presenters, brilliant guests, news analysis, the likes of which you won't get anywhere else. For more details on that, thisweek.org.uk. Tony Gosling. It's coming up for 6 o'clock. So it is. And Tony mentioned Emma Barn there, and you might have been wondering why I jumped in there robustly to challenge him. Emma Barnett is a BBC radio presenter. She presents Women's Hour on the Beeb. She previously did BBC Radio 5 Live. She's also worked for LBC Radio. And for a time, and she might still be doing this, Newsnight. Yes, I think she does Newsnight too. She's a Jewish woman, brought up in Manchester. And her father, Ian Barnett, is a bit of a scumbag. He was convicted of running brothels and filling those brothels with trafficked women and taking some of those women and filming sex films with them and selling them. Dreadful guy. And Tony made an insinuation there, or put it out there, that Barnett, you know, shared the blame and the shame for some of that. I don't know that, but there's no evidence to suggest she did. She was in her early teens when this was going on. There was an unflattering email that was brought out during his trial. This guy Barnett, I think it's Ian Barnett. I stand to be corrected, but her father anyway. And in that email exchange, she sarcastically referenced his bitches. You know, suggesting she knew full well how he was earning his money. Anyhow, I don't like Barnett, but I'm not going to, you know, to go that low in terms of my criticism of her. I don't like her as a presenter. I don't like her as a journalist. I don't believe she is a journalist, but that's neither here nor there. It's an interesting story, is the story of her father and what he was doing here in the Northwest. You are with the Richie Allen Show. It is live, of course, as always, from Salford, from BBG Towers. I'm with you 5 to 7, Monday to Thursday, Sunday morning melodies, every Sunday between 10 and 12. Lovely to be with you today.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Visit richieallen.co.uk and make a financial contribution today.